It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're just under a year and a half away from the 2024 presidential election, but already a growing number of candidates have entered the race, with more likely still to come. Last week, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis became the latest to announce his campaign, joining six other Republicans in the primary to try and unseat President Biden, who faces two challengers so far in his own party. The DeSantis announcement came the same day as the Marquette Law School released its latest poll measuring public opinion on different presidential candidates and some of the top issues that could shape the 2024 election. We're taking a closer look at those results and the field of candidates with the help of the person behind the poll. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the pool of Republican candidates running for president so far for 2024? Do you think any of them could unseat Trump as a Republican front runner? Why or why not? And what issues do you think will be the most important to voters in the next presidential election? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Charles Franklin is a professor of law and public policy at Marquette University and director of the Marquette University Law School Poll. He's also co-founder of Pollster.com and founder of PollsandVotes.com. Charles, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. Good to be with you.
Now, before we start saying numbers here, one little caveat, I guess, a warning. I looked back 8 years ago at this time, the 2016 campaign. Mid-2015, a guy by the name of Scott Walker, Wisconsin governor, he was a front runner for Republicans. He dropped out of the race a couple months later. We're at a stage where things could change pretty quick, right?
Yes, we absolutely are. And I think that bears repeating often and loudly. There's a sort of simultaneous but opposite view here. Mm-hmm. One set of people say polls mean nothing at this point. But another set of people say so-and-so has the race locked in. You know, it's Trump's to lose. These things can change. And as you point to 2015, here in the state, we saw a huge change as Scott Walker went from a front runner to dropping out at the end of the summer.
But starting a poll now, you can get a baseline and see what changes, what kind of progress is going. How often will you be checking in on the trends in this race?
We'll be doing this every 2 months, every other month for the national survey. And you're exactly right. The point is that we're not polling today to say who the eventual winner will be. But when we look back 16 months from now, we want to have a clear record of who emerged when and what changed over the course of the campaign. And it's think of the difference between a snapshot at the very beginning of the movie and the whole movie. We've got the snapshot now. When we get to November 2024, we'll be able to look back and watch the entire movie and see how the candidates emerged or collapsed.
Looking at the latest poll now, you found that either Donald Trump or Ron DeSantis were ahead of Joe Biden again in the national polling. Can you talk about what you saw there?
Sure. Trump leads by 5 points over Biden, 52-47, and DeSantis leads by 4 points, 52-48. Those are still pretty close races, and we've seen the lead shift a little bit. Biden has been a bit ahead in earlier polling, but all of it points to a pretty close race. And again, at this point, that tells you relative strength, not eventual outcome. But certainly the Biden administration, the Biden campaign, has to pay attention to this and not take 2024 for granted.
Then looking at the Republican field so far, we got a handful of names in. I think more expected to come over the next couple few months. What did you find when you asked people, and especially Republicans, about the race for the nomination?
Yes. And so this is among Republican primary voters. Donald Trump has stepped out to a pretty good lead at this point, 46%, DeSantis at 25%. And then there's a big drop off to Nikki Haley at 5% and Vivek Ramaswamy at 3%. Nobody else rises to even 3%. We asked about 11 different candidates in this. That is a bit of an improvement from March, when we had Trump at 40% and DeSantis at 35%. So you're seeing a bit of a rise for Trump in the party, a bit of a decline for DeSantis. Of course, just this past week, DeSantis officially got into the race and has a heavy campaign scheduled this week in Iowa and in New Hampshire, as Trump is also campaigning in Iowa this week.
Now, a big Trump advantage in 2016 seemed to be, you know, along the course of the primary, he never had or rarely had majority support, but he almost always had plurality support, consistent levels of support, and with a big wide open field, that was enough to see him through. As we see more and more people entering this race, does that make it seem like the same thing could happen again?
Well, I think it certainly does. You see the support for everybody in single digits is scattered across a lot of candidates. Haley at just 5% is hardly emerging as a front runner. It's only DeSantis at 25 that gets up into double digits. But I think, again, it's important to realize that in previous years, including 2012, we saw three or four different candidates make runs for at least second place and really rise quickly, though in 2012, those same candidates fell off pretty quickly, and Mitt Romney ended up with the nomination. The other thing that's different this time compared to 2016 with Trump is that at this point, he's polling in the mid to upper 40s in most surveys among Republican voters. That's a bit higher than the 30s or high 20s even that he was typically in 2016. So I think it's important to note that Trump is a more dominant figure in the party this year than in 2016, though there's certainly still the possibility for him to go into a tough spot and slump, and for any of a number of these alternatives to maybe get their moment to make their case and surge.
Talking to Charles Franklin with the Marquette University Law School poll, looking at the Republican field of candidates for president, the issues that could shape this race, and more. You can join in at 800-642-1234. We'll go to your calls now. Tom is with us in Madison. Tom, hi.
Good afternoon. I would gladly cross party lines and vote for a Liz Cheney, Michael Steele ticket.
Thanks for the call, Tom. So Liz Cheney, I don't think she showed up in your polling. I don't know that she has visited places like New Hampshire, I know, but I don't know that she's seriously considering running. Michael Steele, the former Republican National Committee chair, who's been critical of the Trump era of the party as well. Charles, candidates waiting to get in, other people that you polled or didn't poll?
Well, we have not asked about Cheney, though, in fact, some national polling has asked about her. I think what you find there is that within the Republican Party, she is viewed quite negatively, but this reflects the divide in the party where a majority are quite positive to Trump, even if they're not favoring him as their nominee. And Cheney is not that popular within the Republican Party, except for the small never Trump faction of the party. So I think what Tom reflects is the possibility of crossover votes. But unfortunately, in the case of Cheney, that's someone who's very unlikely to be able to win the Republican nomination.
Thanks for that call. Lenny joins us now in Lake Geneva. Lenny, hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Lenny?
You know, I think Trump is unbeatable on the Republican side of things, simply because all the other candidates, none of them are entertainers. None of them are entertainers. And I think, unfortunately, Americans want to be entertained every waking moment, and it's not policy anymore. It's entertainment and politics, and I think that at the end of the day, he'll win because nobody else can entertain and provide drama like Donald Trump. And before I leave you, here's the ultimate left liberal Democratic candidates ticket. It would be Matthew McConaughey for president and Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, as VP. And I'm not kidding you, unbeatable.
Lenny, thanks for the call. Lenny pointed toward, I think, something other people have observed, Charles. Is this now more about whether you like this candidate or not, whether they're entertaining or not, versus this candidate's policy leanings?
Well, I think entertainment is certainly a big feature in modern American politics. Way back in the old days, we used to talk about charisma. Did a candidate have charisma? That wasn't quite the same as entertainment value, but I think we've seen that entertainment value rise, as we've seen entertainers like Arnold Schwarzenegger win governor of California, not to mention Ronald Reagan, for that matter. So I do think there is an emphasis on personality. I'd put it in the broader context that elections are broadly about parties, issues, and candidates. And the candidate factor has always been a big feature. Now, maybe the emphasis on what kind of personality, what kind of candidate has more of the entertainment value than maybe it once did.
Thanks for that call, Lenny. We're talking to Marquette Law School poll director Charles Franklin about the candidates in the race for president in 2024, especially the Republican field, and some of the top issues that could shape that election. They recently did a national poll on the candidates and the issues, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think issues like abortion will be a big factor in the presidential race next year? What is the big issue for you, if not abortion? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Charles Franklin, professor of law and public policy at Marquette University, director of the Marquette University Law School poll, with us to talk about the latest Marquette poll looking at the biggest issues in the 2024 presidential election, public opinion of the candidates who have entered the race so far. You can join in with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. Charles, before we go back to our callers, I wanted to talk about at least one of the issues in the race. You surveyed people about the issue of abortion. People have seen it in Wisconsin as a big factor in the state Supreme Court race. What were some of the biggest findings there?
I think the big takeaway is that a substantial majority still say that abortion should be legal in all or most cases. That's 68% in this month's survey. 32% say it should be illegal in all or most. But those numbers haven't changed very much. Back in May of 2022, a full year ago, it was 67% legal in all or most, 32% illegal in all or most. So there hasn't been much change in that. People are still largely disapproving of the Supreme Court's decision in overturning Roe versus Wade. But there's not very much agreement on when during a pregnancy abortion should be limited or banned. The public sort of struggles to reach a majority on any of the options we gave. The only true majority is 56% would favor a ban after 6 months, but a minority favors bans after 15 weeks, 6 weeks, or any time after conception. So you're just not seeing very much momentum there to support bans on a national basis. Obviously, state by state, there's a lot of variation in that and a lot of variation in what individual states have done and adopted as policy in their states.
Let's go back to our callers. Jeff is with us now in Superior. Hello, Jeff.
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. If the election were today, like the Wisconsin primary or something, I would vote for Tim Scott, the senator from South Carolina. But I think the economy is going to be the number one issue, and we may see a third-party candidate like Elon Musk at the last minute.
Jeff, thanks a lot for the call. First of all, Tim Scott, Charles, you asked about him in the poll. You were in the field, I think, just before he would have announced his candidacy officially.
Yes, and he's very little known. You know, in Washington, he's well-known and well-thought of, but even among Republican primary voters, we get 72% that say they don't. 72% who say they've. I'm going to say this right eventually. 59% say they haven't heard enough about him among Republican primary voters. It's a little higher among the population at large. He's net positive. 28 favorable to 13 unfavorable, But this is a perfect example of someone who's got a strong Washington reputation, but is simply not well known nationally yet. But that's exactly why we have these long primary campaigns, is so a person like Scott can emerge, have his chance to make his case.
Thanks for the call, Jeff. Jeff also mentioned the possibility of third-party races. Now, Elon Musk, not born in the U.S., so not eligible. Also, he seems to support the DeSantis campaign, at least so far. But some people have raised the possibility of third-party runs, especially if it's a Trump-Biden race. There's been some other polling saying people don't want another Trump-Biden race. What did you find, Charles?
Our data shows the public is pretty reluctant about a Trump-Biden rematch. We get about 26% who say if it's Biden or Trump, they'd rather get somebody else. It's only when we push them that we get the 52-47 split that we see overall. But what happens when those quarter of the electorate who say they don't like either of these candidates get pushed on it, they ultimately choose somebody. And you also see this in wanting them to run or not. Less than two-thirds of Republicans say they'd like to see Trump run. Less than half of Democrats say they'd like Biden to run. But when it comes to a choice between their party's candidate and the other party's candidate, the vast majority of them come home to their party. So it's easy to look at this discontent with Trump and Biden and say, aha, here's the opening for a third party. But third parties ultimately have to overcome that tendency to choose between your party and the other party and decide on that basis. And lastly, don't forget the Electoral College. That matters hugely in presidential races. Back in 1992, Ross Perot won 19% of the nationwide popular vote, the best of anybody since 1912. And yet he didn't win a single Electoral College vote. And as we know, it's the Electoral College that ultimately decides who the president is.
We'll go to another caller now. Susan is with us in Rhinelander. Susan, hello.
Hi, Rob. Love your show.
Thanks.
Yeah, I just wanted to offer that it seems to be a direct correlation between how things are polling and the fact that so these other candidates just don't get any media airtime, like Asa Hutchinson, for example. I think he'd have a broad appeal if he just could get some oxygen out there in the media space. Thanks so much.
Susan, thanks a lot for the call. And Charles, I think there is a concern that sometimes there's a self-fulfilling prophecy. We see a poll that someone like former Governor Asa Hutchinson isn't getting polled. Well, then we in the media don't talk about him. And then, well, in the next poll, still nobody knows anything about him. What do you think?
Yeah, I think this is where the small early states, Iowa and New Hampshire, have played an important role. There's a big Republican event in Iowa this week that I think most of these Republican candidates are expected to show up for. And that really is the opportunity for these lesser known candidates to go and make an impression. Remember, that was Jimmy Carter's strategy way back when nobody had heard of the Georgia governor at that time. And I do think it's an upside to having some small states early in the process where you can make an impression with voters one-on-one and really genuinely introduce yourself in a way that big states with big TV budgets don't allow.
Thanks a lot for that call. Mike is with us now in Wauwatosa. Mike, hello.
Hi. So in the 2016 election, I think the general population maybe lost some confidence in the accuracy of polling based on what polls were saying versus how the election turned out. How has method changed in polling to basically increase confidence, increase accuracy? Have you guys seen a change in method of polling, I guess, over the last few years?
Mike, thanks a lot. Go ahead, Charles. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm anxious to get this in. there's been a lot of change in polling. We're moving more and more to interviewing people who are on the registered voter list, so we know they're registered to vote. We're also shifting from telephone to online methods of interviewing. It's all about getting people's opinion. And most pollsters now will contact voters or attempt to contact voters through multiple methods, through email, text messages, phone calls, sending letters to their home address and asking them to do polls. So all of these methods are changing. Polling was pretty good in 2022, and it was not so good in 2020. And we obviously had a big error in 2016. So this is an ongoing challenge. 22 here in the state and 2018 here in the state was quite good. 2020, we did pretty well here, but some polling nationally was pretty far off in 22. So I think skepticism is certainly warranted, but it's not because the pollsters aren't trying to adjust. We're very much trying to adjust our methods to reach people where they're willing to be reached and offer us their opinions.
Thanks a lot for that call. And Charles, we'll leave it there. Thanks, as always, for joining us today.
Thank you. Always fun.
That's Charles Franklin, professor of law and public policy at Marquette University and director of the Marquette University Law School Poll. He's also the co-founder of Pollster.com and founder of PollsAndVotes.com. He's with us today to talk about the latest Marquette poll and public opinion of the candidates and the issues in the upcoming 2024 presidential election. Is there an issue, a point of concern for you as you start to think about the 2024 election? Or are you putting off thinking about the 2024 election? Still a ways away? Let us know. Email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, the president and House Republican leaders have a debt ceiling plan, but will it make it through Congress? We'll find out what's in the deal, why it matters for Wisconsin, and what comes next. And we'll take a hike around Wisconsin. An epic event called the Mammoth March comes to the state. Get a preview and find some great places for a hike, big or small, in Wisconsin. That's all tomorrow on Central Time. Coming up after the news, finding the right mental health treatment can be overwhelming. We'll talk about some common obstacles to finding a therapist in Wisconsin and how to overcome them. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, nearly 400 children in Wisconsin are participating in the largest long-term study of brain development and child health in the U.S. We'll talk with the principal investigator at UW-Milwaukee, who happens to be a parent herself, about the results so far. First, we're at the tail end of Mental Health Awareness Month in the United States. And we often hear advice suggesting that people seek mental health therapy for one reason or another. But it can be hard to know where to even start looking. Our next guest is with us to help overcome the common hurdles to finding effective therapy in Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you yourself have looked for therapy, what kind of obstacles did you encounter? Were you able to find something that you could afford that helped you in your part of the state? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Mary Kay Battaglia is Executive Director of the National Alliance on Mental Illness Wisconsin, or NAMI Wisconsin. Mary Kay, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob, for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, first, how do we know if we might benefit from therapy in the first place?
I would say most people are aware that they're either overly stressed or anxious, or they're not able to function in their daily lives and start perceiving that they might need some help and support. And at that point, I think a lot of people delay getting the help that they need, which is something we discourage. It does take a while to find the right therapist. And sometimes it might require a psychiatrist, but we encourage people to not delay that event, not delay trying to seek the help, because the sooner you get help, the quicker you're on your way to recovery.
And assuming we've made that decision, it might look overwhelming at first. What is the first step? How do we say, okay, I'm going to start my search to connect me with therapy?
Well, sadly, in the United States, the way we find things is first identify what our insurance level is. Do you have Medicaid? Do you have Medicare? Do you have a particular insurance? Do you not have any insurance? And when people call and ask us about that process, that is usually the first place we start, instead of which I would prefer a start is, you know, how can we help? What are your needs? But really the first step in our country is to figure out what your insurance is, and then to find who your insurance provider allows you to contact. And each insurance company will have a list of providers that they support. And if you don't have insurance, it is a little more difficult, but Medicaid and Medicare do have resources as well that you can find a therapist. It's just sometimes a little harder.
And then aside from coverage, finding the right type of therapist for whatever particular problem we're dealing with, what is the variety of therapies out there? How do we find the one that meets our current needs?
That is a great question. And I think people really need to consider what it is that they're wanting to seek and most comfortable with. I think a lot of people will first identify whether they want a male or female. They may identify whether they want someone older with experience or someone younger that might be closer to their own age if they're younger. It could be the need to find somebody that works in a specialty area. There are websites that you can go to that allow you to, there's a SAMHSA website that allows you to look up different therapists and the therapeutics that they utilize. There's particular therapies for anxiety, for trauma, for OCD, for depression, and you'll just want to look at who provides those services. There's certifications that therapists go through for those specialty type of therapies, and you'll want to find what it is. And sometimes you may not know what kind of therapy you need, right? And so then you would seek out a person that you identify with, that you feel you would be comfortable with. If you come from a population like the Black community or a Spanish-speaking community, might want to be particular in trying to find someone that provides that service. And then they may be able to guide you to who would be the best person to provide that service. It's not always the first person you go to see that can provide you the best service.
And Mary Kay, we talked about financial accessibility. How about geographic accessibility? What do things look like in different parts of Wisconsin when it comes to the availability of therapy and maybe the ability to pick and choose among different potential providers?
That is one thing that the pandemic has helped us with. There's now something called telehealth. And a lot of people are seeing therapists on their computer or their smartphone and can have sessions through a telehealth appointment. And those are reimbursable at this time. A lot of people, like myself, much prefer to see someone in person. And so you're limited by your geographic area. You're right, Rob. Some areas of our state have limited mental health professionals, and it can be more difficult to find a therapist in some of the more rural areas of Wisconsin. But there are support groups, there are ways to connect with online services if that's something people would be open to.
Talking to Mary Kay Battaglia with NAMI Wisconsin, looking at how to seek therapy, how to get professional help for our mental health needs. You can join in with your questions, your experiences at 800-642-1234. Have you been on this search yourself for yourself or a loved one, maybe? Have you used remote therapy, online therapy to meet your needs? If you couldn't find someone in your immediate area, join in at 800-642-1234. If you're a patient or a provider, 800-642-1234 is the number. Mary Kay, I've talked to people over the years who have said, yeah, I went in for therapy and the first person I saw, they were fine, but it wasn't a good match. It didn't meet my needs, but maybe that second or the third one did. Can you talk about the need to maybe not take to say, oh, this first one didn't work, therefore therapy doesn't work for me.
I think that is a common thing, and I think people need to be prepared. It's a personal relationship. A therapist will be someone that you connect with and can provide the support you need. And we're all very unique. It's a very unique process to get the support you need through a therapist. And you're right, that first one may not be the right fit. You might find that you need somebody that holds you more accountable, or somebody you need someone more empathic to your needs. It's just a unique thing because you're dealing with someone, you know, it's the personality of the therapist, and it's your own, what you bring to the therapy as well. So I encourage people, again, to start the search early, because it may not be that first therapist that you connect with that is helpful for you.
We're talking to Mary Kay Battaglia, Executive Director of NAMI Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234 as we talk about how to find a mental health therapy, a therapist, maybe in our own area or online. You can join in with your experiences or your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Were you able to connect with the kind of help you needed? Were there big obstacles, financial and insurance obstacles, or there's nobody in your area who provided the right kind of treatment? Let us know. 800-642-1234 is the number to call or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Mary Kay Battaglia, Executive Director of NAMI Wisconsin. We're talking about common obstacles people face when seeking mental health treatment and how to overcome those obstacles. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you've had trouble seeking mental health treatment, have those problems been mostly financial, logistical, social? Have you ever tried remote or online therapy? What did you think about that? What questions do you have for our guest? Call 800-642-1234. If you're willing to share your story, 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Mary Kay, can you talk about the kind of resources NAMI provides here in Wisconsin to the people we're talking about, people seeking mental health treatment?
Yes. NAMI Wisconsin is the supporter of 25 affiliates across our state, who provide support groups and classes for people living with a mental illness, as well as their family members, especially those family members with people living with a serious mental illness. They sometimes need extra support. So we have classes and support groups that you can connect with at your local affiliate, and you can find your local affiliate at our website. But if you don't have a local affiliate, we, again, through the silver lining of the pandemic, started statewide support groups. And you can find that we started a program called Being Together, because we have several counties that don't have an affiliate located in their midst. And so we created this program called Being Together so that people can join online to a support group, either a peer support group, which is someone living with a mental illness, or a family support group. And you know, it does sometimes take a while to find that therapist, and sometimes you have to be put on a wait list, or maybe an appointment's a few months out. And this is a great way for people to connect and feel supported and not feel alone by joining our support groups. And they're absolutely no cost to the person that participates.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Kathy is with us in Delafield. Kathy, hi.
Hi. Hey, I just wanted to mention, as a parent to an adult child who's really, you know, 22, with mental health challenges and also on the spectrum, our experience in Waukesha County was the police, our local police, were awesome trying to get our daughter off the highway. And unfortunately, the Waukesha County Sheriff had to take her to the hospital for screening, where the social worker spoke to us, spoke to her therapist, and spoke to the police who knew her, all three of us saying she needed to go into residential care. And instead, the social worker released her and followed up with us and said, you know, we have a safety plan in place, and they released her back to the drug house for the safety plan, which is shocking to
Kathy,
me.
Kathy, I'm so sorry to hear about that. Mary Kay, this isn't just in Waukesha County. I know there are concerns when someone appears at an emergency room with some kind of mental health crisis. What happens then with connecting them to services? I know there are a lot of efforts around the state. Do you have thoughts on the experience Kathy brought up?
Kathy, I am sorry. I hear your concern, and it is a very difficult situation because once someone is an adult, they have to want to seek the help and get the help. And the only way we can get someone to get the help when family members and those around them think they do is to declare them unable to an involuntary admissions. And in our state and most states in the United States, it's very, very hard to get that. They have to be actively a harm to themselves or others. And while I totally understand and respect everyone's privacy and the ability to take care of themselves, the problem is that when people are in a mental health crisis, they frequently aren't thinking very clearly, and we're asking them to think clearly when they're not in a mental state to do so. So you are right. All of those services can be out there, and I highly encourage, as Kathy has pointed out, we have officers throughout the state that are crisis intervention trained. And if you do have to call the emergency number and ask for an officer, ask for a CIT or a mental health officer, because they will be trained on these events and understand that the person is not a criminal, but they are in a mental health crisis, and be a more positive response. But Kathy, I understand your concern. We are currently advocating for crisis stabilization centers and crisis facilities across the state so that we can find better ways to help people that are in a crisis. But it is a very difficult situation for family members when they know someone needs help and they're not willing to get the help. They don't believe they need the help.
Kathy, thanks for sharing that with us. Best to you and your family and your daughter, of course. Thank you for sharing that. Linda joins us now in Madison. Linda, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My issue concerns finding the right kind of psychiatrist or psychologist. I was seeing one because my sister was dying and I was caring for her. And she was great, but then my insurance changed, and she didn't take that insurance. Since then, my two sisters, including my best friend and my mother, have died. Mm. I've been diagnosed with complicated grief or complex grief. I had a psychologist who, bless her soul, her intentions were good, but the worst thing she'd probably ever experienced was flushing her pet goldfish down the toilet. And then I got a psychiatrist who spent all of my appointments writing his next book. Oh. And I have been unable to find someone who specializes in complex grief.
Linda, I thank you for sharing that. I'm sorry for all of your losses. Mary Kay, finding someone who can relate to our problem, in this case, complex grief, and I don't know, is a good fit for us. Do you have thoughts for Linda, Mary Kay?
I'm sorry, Linda, about all your losses. That's a lot to take on. And the diagnosis of complex grief has just entered the DSM-5 and is a newer diagnosis, but having grief and having therapy for that would be similar to long-term depression. And I'm sorry, it's hard to find a compatible therapist for that sort of recovery, which is what you're going through. You're going through a long grief recovery. I would just suggest that you continue to try. You're in Madison, and there are some great psychiatrists and psychologists. And I do want to differentiate. A lot of people get those two confused. A psychiatrist is a medical doctor. They go through medical training to become a physician, and then they get a specialty in psychiatry, and they're able to prescribe medications for someone that needs medication. And a psychologist or a master's of social work or a family therapist are not provide not prescribers. And there are more options for therapists and psychologists than there are psychiatry. So some people will need both, and some people will only need a psychologist or a therapist. And I just want to make sure we differentiate those. But I am so sorry to hear of your losses. And I just encourage you to continue to try to find the right match for you, because you deserve that right match.
Linda, good luck to you in that search. Thank you again for calling in. Mary Kay, is there an effort, I guess, on the supply side? Are there efforts to try to get more providers out there available to the public in more parts of the state?
Absolutely. Many of the things that we're advocating for is more seats at both of the medical colleges we have, UW and Medical College of Wisconsin, to increase the number of psychiatric seats that are available, maybe find ways. There's some talk of finding ways to decrease the cost for them to either live in Wisconsin or to go to school in Wisconsin and stay in Wisconsin. There's been some licensing issues and limitations that we've been advocating for. Just in the last year, they opened up the license, so if someone was licensed in adjoining states, that they could practice in our state as well. And there's also a need for other type of assistant therapists, something that we are advocating for, which is a certified peer specialist. So that's somebody who is certified as a person that's lived with a mental illness that can provide that support. I also do want to plug the peer respite centers that we have throughout the state. There are 7 of them, and you can stay at a peer respite center for up to 7 days and have a certified peer specialist there to help you and support you. And they also accept what we call at our office warm line calls. So if you're struggling with your mental health, you can call the peer run respites, and they will have somebody, a certified peer specialist, call you back and just talk to you if you need that support. So that is another way through our state that people can receive support when they're feeling either anxious or depressed or down or in grief, as Linda was, that will provide that warm line support to you.
And Mary Kay, that takes me to where I want to end this. Something you brought up at the beginning, this can be a long process finding the help you suggest getting started right away. In addition to that peer support you just mentioned, what are other things people can do to get some help while they're waiting to find or waiting for that therapist search to bear fruit?
Well, we always encourage you to advocate for yourself. We also advocate that you take positive coping skills, find the things that are positive things that you can do that make you feel better. Find somebody that can advocate with you, because sometimes it's very hard for you to advocate for yourself, a loved one, a family member that can help you. Start the trek of trying to find that therapist, connect with the respite centers and the warm line, and reach out to NAMI and see if there's a support group or a class that you can take that will help you in that journey. And frequently, those support groups and classes, people will give you information about local resources that will be helpful to you. It is a little bit of a wind of navigation to try to find the perfect fit, but you do have to advocate for yourself. You deserve to feel better, and there is help out there. It just sometimes takes a few extra steps to get there.
Mary Kay, thanks so much for joining us today.
You're very welcome. Thank you so much for acknowledging Mental Health Awareness Month as it comes to an end. Thank you.
That's Mary Kay Battaglia, Executive Director of NAMI Wisconsin. You can find more mental health resources at their website, namiwisconsin.org. That's namiwisconsin.org. Coming up after the news, 12,000 children are participating in the nation's biggest long-term study of child health and brain development. About 400 of them are in Wisconsin. Learn more about the study and what researchers have learned since it started in 2015. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time.